Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Naithad vichitram anujarbamayina. Paravaranam paramasya vedasa. Agopi atsparshana dota patakaha. Prapatma samyam tvasatam sudurabham. Naithad vichitram manujarbamayina. Paravaranam paramasya vedasa. Gopi atsparshana dota pataka. Prapatma samyam tvasatam sudurlabham. Naithad vitram manujarba mayana. Paravaranam paramasya vedasa. Agopi atsparshana dauta patalaka. Prapatma samyam tvasatam sudurlabham. Please chant. Ladies, please.
aside.
Synonyms. Na, not. Etat, this. Vichitram, is wonderful. Manuja, Arbha, Mayana, of Krishna, who appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj, and Yashoda, being compassionate upon them. Para avarnam, of all causes and effects. Paramasya, Vedasaha, of the Supreme Creator. Aga, Api, Agasura, also Yatsparshana, simply by the slight association of whom, Duta Patakaha, he came from all contamination of material existence. Prapa became elevated. Atma Samyam, to a body exactly resembling that of Narayan. To but Asatam Sadurlabham, which is not at all possible to be obtained by contaminated souls, but everything can be possible by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Krishna is the cause of all causes. The causes and effects of the material world, both higher and lower, are all created by the Supreme Lord, the original controller. When Krishna appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, he did so by his causeless mercy. Consequently, for him to exhibit his unlimited opulence was not at all wonderful. Indeed, he showed such great mercy that even Agasura, the most sinful miscreant, was elevated to being one of his associates and achieving Sarupya Mukti, which is actually impossible for materially contaminated persons to attain. Again, the translation, please repeat. Krishna is the cause of all causes. The causes and effects of the material world, both higher and lower, are all created by the Supreme Lord, the original controller. When Krishna appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, he did so by his causeless mercy. Consequently, for him to exhibit his unlimited opulence was not at all wonderful. Indeed, he showed such great mercy that even Agasura, the most sinful miscreant, was elevated to being one of his associates and achieving Sarupya Mukti, which is actually impossible for materially contaminated persons to attain. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word maya is also used in connection with love. Excuse me. Out of maya, love, a father has affection for his child. Therefore, the word Mayanaha indicates that Krishna, out of love, appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj and assumed the form of a human child, Manujabha. Krishna is the cause of all causes. He is the creator of cause and effect, and He is the supreme controller. Nothing is impossible for Him. Therefore, that He enabled even a living being like Agasura to attain the salvation of Sarupya Mukti was not at all wonderful for Krishna. For those who do not know what Sarupya Mukti is, it means salvation in which one assumes or has the same form as the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Krishna took pleasure in entering the mouth of Agasura. Go ahead. Oh, I'm doing purport. Okay, no repeat. Sorry, got lost. Krishna took pleasure in entering the mouth of Agasura in a sporting spirit along with his associates. Therefore, when Agasura, by that sporting association, as maintained in the spiritual world, was purified of all contamination, he attained Sarupya Mukti and Vimukti by the grace of Krishna. So Sarupya Mukti, I've already explained, and Vimukti means deliverance or or God realization by the grace of Krishna. For Krishna, this was not at all wonderful. Nothing is impossible for him. Therefore, that he enabled even a living being like Agasura to attain the salvation of... Well, I can't see it, and I forgot to put in page 5. So, can somebody read that? I can't see it from here. It's finished? Oh, okay, great. Omagyana timidandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So in this verse, we are exposed to the fact that Lord Sri Krishna, Krishna is not only the cause of all causes, but that nothing is impossible for him. He is omniscient, all-knowing, omnipresent, present everywhere simultaneously, and omnipotent, all-powerful. There is nothing that he cannot do. He is unlimited. He can expand and extend himself unlimitedly. It's really inconceivable with our little tiny minds. But when we look up at the heavens at night and we realize that there are literally billions of universes up there. I was just reading about that this morning. Billions, just in the Milky Way itself. That's simply amazing. Universes meaning a sun with the planets revolving around the sun. So these are his creations. So what is impossible for Krishna to offer or to give or create or manifest? Absolutely nothing. No one can ever think that, yes, I know Krishna. Now I understand Krishna. Now I fully grasp what Krishna is all about. Even Lord Brahma says, if anybody thinks that, he's an absolute fool. He says, I don't understand Krishna. As for Brahma, who has been given the secret of creating many, many universes, this universe in particular, and there are other Brahmas who create others. And the secrets are revealed to Brahma. There are different codes, like DNA codes for human beings, for cats, for dogs, for pigs. For every one of these creatures have a slightly different DNA, and which determine the specific or unique characteristics of that species or genus. So Krishna, he knows everything. He contains or possesses all opulences. He's most beautiful. He's wealthy, most wealthy. He owns everything. There's nothing that's not his. So when someone says, you know, I gave Krishna this, I offered Krishna this, as if he was taking something of his own and giving it to Krishna who never had it. So you didn't give anything. All you did basically is acknowledge that this is yours, my Lord, and you loaned it to me, and now I am offering it to you as a way of expressing my love to you, that you were so kind enough to allow me to borrow it for my purposes, for what I had to use it for what I needed it for. So where is the offering? The offering is in the love, that we want to give something. Why give? To give pleasure to Krishna. That's what love is all about. It's giving Krishna what will give him pleasure. Certain things give him pleasure, and certain things may give him even displeasure. There are so many things that we do here which give him pleasure, and that's why we do them. And depending upon how we do them and the feelings with which we do them will determine how much Krishna gets pleasure. For example, two persons may be dressing the deities, and one devotee may be just putting, you know, he's putting the sleeves on, and then putting it over the head, and then putting the dhoti on. And he's thinking of not just Krishna doing what he has to do, but he's thinking of, well, I have to buy 5 pounds of potatoes a little later on in the day, and then I have to buy some tomatoes, and then I also have to get some celery. Meanwhile, he's dressing Krishna. So he gets the job done, and it looks reasonably good. He's been doing it for 1,000 years, so therefore he's been... It looks okay. And then another devotee is on the other side of him, and he's doing it with a different mood, with a different feeling, with a different flavor, with a different sentiment. And he's saying, oh, let's see, this, if I put this over here, let me look. Ah, yes, that will be very nice. You look beautiful when we put the mirror to you, and you look at yourself, you'll see how beautiful you look just the way this has been arranged. So he makes sure that, you know, the earrings are nice, and the helmet is just spot. And I said, oh, yes, I hope this will give you pleasure, Krishna. I'm not that good a servant. I don't really even know how to dress you well to please you. But I hope you will inspire me this very moment so that I will know how and what to do so that when you see yourself in the mirror, you will be pleased. And I hope you are pleased because that's all I want to do is give you ever-increasing pleasure. So when a devotee is thinking, yes, this is for your pleasure, this is for your satisfaction, this is for your joy, this is what is called pure devotional service, because he's thinking only of the pleasure of Krishna, and he's trying to do everything and anything that he has to do in conjunction with the service that will add or aid or abet or make it better. And if something bothers him, for example, even when he has completed the dressing, but there was something, he felt that there was a button that would have made it even nicer. So what he does, he talks to Pujari, and that we have a button like this because really it needed a gold button over here. So we look around, and he finally finds a gold button. The next time he goes, he puts the gold button on there. Oh, it looks so nice, you see. Just like recently, not too recent, we have this golden altar. I mean, it literally jumps out at you. It looks like it's come down from another world. So why? Why do that? Because to give pleasure to not only, of course, Krishna and Krishna, Radha, or Rukmini and Dwarkadesh and all the other deities, to give pleasure, but to give pleasure to the devotees also. So that when devotees come in, they look at the deities, they're literally stunned. They're kind of almost spellbound. And they look, and they stare, and they gaze, and they ogle, and they can't stop looking. And that's exactly what a devotee wants other devotees to do, to become literally mesmerized by what we see on the altar. Because it is that steady, constant, focused gaze on the Supreme Lord which brings to us his response, the Lord's response. He says, oh, my devotee, look how he is concentrating on me. Look how he's expressing, or she's expressing her affection to me. Look at the nice prayers she's saying with her eyes strictly on my feet. Oh, now she's raising the feet to the knees. Oh, look at that. Now it's on my face. So Krishna is also reacting and responding to what we are doing. We should not think that there's just a stone there. So he's responding, he's reacting, and if he's really very pleased, that response will be felt in our hearts. How is it felt? It may be felt in any one of the eight different ecstatic symptoms which are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. A person may be stunned, he hardly can move, and he continues staring and gazing and ogling. He may begin perspiring profusely. Or the hairs on the arms and the neck and the back may start to go up. Or one may begin to, for example, his voice, he can't speak. He's trying to say some prayers, but nothing's coming out. Because he's caught in that ecstatic symptom. He may start to tremble. Lord Chaitanya's, his hands would tremble, his lips would tremble, even his teeth trembled. Devotees thought his teeth were going to fall out of his mouth. And then sometimes he would fall down on the ground and his legs would virtually almost disappear and his arm disappear. He looked like a tortoise. And then vice versa. The arms would come spreading out. The joints would all become slack. And he would look about 8 feet tall. So these are, of course, the very advanced ecstatic symptoms. I don't think you find them anywhere else except in Lord Chaitanya. But the other ones that I mentioned, they are available. Also, one's color may become blanched, very white. Another thing, one may fall to the floor unconscious of the external world, but very conscious of the internal world. Krishna may be so kind and so merciful and so loving, just as he's being merciful to Agasura, and he's giving him Sarupya Mukti, a criminal, a killer, a demon. And yet he's giving him such a wonderful mercy like this. So we see how Krishna just, we should never think that, and I'm sure most of us don't, but sometimes those feelings can creep in, that I'm just dressing a stone. I'm just dressing some marble. So that idea should be perished and stamped out. We're dressing God. And what a great opportunity. It's such a great privilege. Who else in the world dresses God? People get up, they go and take a shower sometimes, and they go to work, and they go to work, they do this, they do that, and they try to, you know, make their living and so forth. But we're getting the opportunity to put clothes on the Lord, to put makeup on the Lord, put adornments on the Lord, to get totally absorbed and engrossed and completely overwhelmed with the service of trying to please Krishna. So that's what love is about. It's trying to please. It's not merely an idea. It's not merely a vague sentiment. It's not merely a thought. It's a feeling which goes out in the form of action. It also can go out in other forms. For example, Krishna is saddened to see all of his children suffering so much. So another aspect of love is relieving suffering. You have a child. Your child is crying. So you just don't leave the child there and just hope that it'll stop. Maybe he's got a little safety pin poking him in the side. Or maybe thirsty, or maybe hungry, or maybe this. But you try to find out and relieve the pain or the distress of the child. So finally you find out, give a little drink, or give the breast, or whatever, and then the child stops crying. Relieving suffering, and then the mother feels, of course, so good, so nice that the child is now casting a nice little smile at her. And every mother likes to see the child smile. That's why they often do this dandling thing, you know, where they put up and down, and the child kind of smiles, you know, do all that kind of stuff. So it's very nice to see the child smiling. That's what mothers like to do that. And that's part of love, wanting to relieve pain or suffering. And the Lord, is not exactly pleased or gladdened to see all of his children suffering. So when you give out a book to someone, rest assured, guaranteed, Lord is pleased, satisfied. He's suffering somewhat for that person's, you know, that person's misery. Of course, that was, he made choices which led to that misery. But we as devotees should be compassionate, as we say every morning, Dvangcha Kalpa Drupyascha, be compassionate upon the conditioned souls. They don't know what to do. They're in ignorance. All they keep hearing about is, you know, Mr. Trump and Mr. This and Mr. That and all of the lies and the twistings of the truth. And all of the different things that come out, promises being made, promises being broken every few days. So people, they're discouraged. They feel, what is this world coming to? You can't rely on your leaders. They're all, you know, they're a bunch of liars. And everybody thought, you know, well, the leaders, they must know something. Yeah, what they know is how to fill their pockets with the taxpayers' money. They're very good at that. That's where their expertise comes. So, therefore, where can people go? You know, some go to the psychiatrist, you know, and they spend long periods of time, years and years, you know, just to find out, you know, what the id is, what the ego is, what the instinct is, and all of this. And it all happened because, and they're told things like, well, it all happened because of your mother, you know, she didn't give you enough milk when you were a baby. So therefore, you're suffering from a deprivation complex. So people walk on, yeah, that's it. So when they see their mother, I don't want to look at you. You caused my trouble. People do that. Not only that, but they when they get married or they have a girlfriend, they start to project those same feelings of hostility that they have to their mother who deprived them of this, that, or whatever. And they think, you know, they project it onto another woman and what happens is that there are feelings of animosity, hostility, disgust, or any of these type of things. So this means it means abnormality, which comes from abnormal philosophy, or better yet, really no philosophy, or the philosophy of simply materialism. So the important point is that everyone has the opportunity to relieve Krishna of any distress or any sorrow or any upset that he may have, seeing certain things going on in this world which we ourselves choose to create or cause. And when we give an opportunity for a person to find out how this can be overcome, what we need to do, who we are, why we're here, what is the true purpose of life, can one really be always happy? Or is happiness always varying or alternating with pain and suffering? Is that our lot? Is that what we should stand for or bear with for the rest of our life? Do I have to be miserable 1 week, 1 day, 1 month? And then I can be happy for 1 week, 1 day, 1 month? Is that what it is? And then as we get older and the pains start in the back and then the shoulders and then the neck and this, the pains get greater and greater? Do I have that? Is that all I have? Srila Prabhupada had different pains in his body, but he was transcendental. Transcendental to the pains in the sense that he could be thinking of Krishna. And when he thought of Krishna, he felt joyfulness. He felt happiness. He felt peacefulness. He felt a sense of the other world, the transcendental world, which is above and beyond all the pains and pleasures. You may feel them, but they don't affect you, don't disturb you, don't upset you, don't shake you, don't rattle you, because you're not a part of the world which gives rise to those things. So in an advanced soul, that's what happens. So when we come here and we read these wonderful books, we come to realize that there is an end to all this misery. And as we become more and more purified, our minds become purified, our speech becomes purified, our intelligence becomes purified, the overall consciousness becomes purified. When we become truly purified, or as we say, a pure devotee who wants only to please Krishna, to satisfy Krishna, to increase his pleasure, and to also, as I mentioned a few moments ago, to help people overcome the miseries, the troubles, the difficulties. Give them a true understanding of why they're suffering. Why are you suffering? There is a reason for it. And once that reason is obviated or overcome, there is no more suffering. Suffering is the result of going against the will of Krishna, of God. Violate any of the commandments, and therefore we will suffer. Lie, you steal, or you commit adultery, any of those things, and there will be suffering. You gamble, you will find suffering. Some people become so addicted to gambling that they have their paycheck and they figure they can double it and triple it and quadruple it, go to Las Vegas, and then they lose it all. And they owe the rent, it's coming up. And they owe the gas and the electric coming up, and they have no money to pay it because they were out of control. They couldn't resist the temptation. So when one becomes Krishna conscious, truly, and has a higher taste, a higher joy, a higher pleasure, when one doesn't need these artificial pleasures which make us feel, you win the jackpot and you say, oh, wow, I'm so wonderful. I knew I was special. I knew Lady Luck was smiling on me. I knew it was all because I had that special touch. That's why I won it. And then he wins it and he feels so great. He's got $1 million, maybe won the lottery or this or that. And then what happens? He goes and he blows it. In a few days, goes to Las Vegas, has nothing now. Madness, ignorance, foolishness, not knowing how to use money. Money is a curse unless, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned, unless we know how to use it in a helpful, useful way which will benefit us truly by making us more and more Krishna conscious, more and more God conscious. And more peaceful as a result of that God consciousness, so that we can interact with one another in a calm, controlled, sober fashion. Sometimes I even see devotees, somebody does something, devotees is not in the best mood, maybe didn't get enough sleep. But we have to train ourselves to such that in every devotee is Krishna. The Lord is there. And we have to realize we are addressing Krishna along with the soul, which we call the devotee. So when we keep that in mind, and we know that we don't want to offend the Lord, we don't want to in any way upset or disturb the Lord, then we learn to control our speech. Even sometimes we have to hold in our anger, but that's part of it. Eventually, there's no more material anger. Material anger means that my material pleasure is being threatened, and therefore I get angry. If that's all I live for, my pleasure, my joy, my satisfactions, my tongue, my ear, my nose, my skin, this, and I'm looking forward to that pleasure, and then you come along and you interfere with it, you threaten it, you disturb, that I'm not going to have it, and that's my all in all. That's what I feel my happiness from, then I have no happiness. But if we have inner happiness, which comes from our loving relationship with Krishna, and Krishna is reciprocating and giving it to us, and that happiness is felt in the heart and spreads throughout the body, and we feel those ecstasies that I was mentioned a little earlier, then those things don't even bother. So if you don't get your sweet rice this week, so what? Maybe you'll get it next week. And if the halwa isn't there, so what? And if the halwa doesn't taste up to your standard, so what tomorrow? You've got a higher taste. Of course, it's nice to have good-tasting halwa, and I'm not telling the cooks that you should not make it good, or that you should excuse yourself if you do make it not so good. All these things should be, when they're done as loving service for Krishna, then we're attentive, we're thoughtful, we're careful to do it the way Krishna would like it. It's when it becomes, as I said earlier, indifferent, robotic, uncaring, thoughtless, just get it done, get it over with, done, finished, on to the next thing. This is like living like a nun. Not even animals live better than that. Even they are very thoughtful when they're eating. You ever watch the cat? They taste it very carefully. They lick it, or the dog smells it. He's very thoughtful about what goes into his mouth. So we need to be just more and more thoughtful, all of us, including myself, because it's easy to forget Krishna. Once we remember Krishna, remember that everything we do should be for His pleasure, then we keep in mind the mantra, I turn this water on for you, my Lord. I take this shower to clean the body so that I can present myself properly to you. This is for you, Lord. I walk for you. I talk for you. I think for you. I'm trying to do everything for your glory, everything for your satisfaction. Please guide me. Please direct me. Please help me. If I don't get your help and I simply try to do it by my own endeavor, it will be a disaster, as it has been so many times. But if I'm dependent upon you, as Krishna says, and all activities just depend upon me, work always under my protection and such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you'll pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, well then, you will be lost. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. So Krishna is making these promises. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna at the same time. Perform your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me. You will come to me without a doubt. So Krishna makes these promises, and he fulfills those promises if we make effort. And if we're having difficulty making the effort, then we have to pray to him. We have to beg him. Also take the association of devotees who are not having those problems. Association, you just have to even stand, listen how they chant, listen how they sing, listen how they give classes. And if we absorb ourselves in these, then what happens is that we begin to we absorb those qualities of that particular devotee who has overcome some of the difficulties or troubles or trials we may be going through. But if we think, you know, well, I don't want to listen to this person. I don't want to listen to this person. You know, out of false ego, out of pride, out of arrogance, out of thinking we're better, then we don't grow. So association with devotees and treasuring that association, cherishing it, thinking this is so blessed, so wonderful, that I'm so privileged. And if we're thinking like that and we're looking at each devotee with an eye of appreciation, of gratitude, then you can only have good relationships or no relationship. If the person doesn't want to be friendly and loving and kind, well then there's nothing there. But generally speaking, if we express warm, kind, loving sentiments to another devotee, usually I always find they always express the same feelings back. And you can discuss things in a calm and a controlled and sober fashion. Such a way that things can be accomplished and things can be done. So our main thing in this particular verse is that Krishna's grace is there for all of us, just as he's given it to Agasura. Sometimes the devotees, they wonder, well, why should he give him, it goes, first he gets Sayuja Mukti, kind of he enters into the light, and then from there he gets Sarupya Mukti, he goes to Vaikuntha. Well, why would you put him there? This man wanted to kill Krishna. So we cannot just figure out all the things of Krishna's reason. Sometimes there's a backstory which we don't know about. And it's not told to us necessarily. For example, we'll take Putana. There was a backstory to her. She was, before in a previous lifetime, she was the daughter of Bali Maharaj. In some Puranas they have a sister, but anyway, I'm going to argue that point. So she was a daughter of Bali Maharaj. And when Vamanadeva came into the arena where this big sacrifice was being held, the daughter of Bali Maharaj, whose name was Ratnamali, she saw Vamanadeva, who was very beautiful, very diminutive, kind of like a little, like a dwarf. And she looked at him and she stared at him. She became enamored of him. She couldn't keep her eyes off him. And she just kept thinking, I would love to have a baby who looks like him so that I can nurse him. And the Lord received, he helped, he's omniscient, he knows, he's in her heart, in everyone's heart. And so when he heard that, he said, it shall be given. And so in another lifetime, which is a lifetime in the future, Putana came to give poison to Krishna by poisoning her breast and trying to nurse him. So that's what happened. Now it's interesting that she chose that way to kill him. There was something deep in the subconscious that still had not been fulfilled or satisfied, and that was to nurse the child. So there was an ambivalent feeling going on. Now, on the one hand, she wanted to kill him because she was an agent of Kamsa. On the other hand, from the subconscious, from deep down in the past, she wanted to love him and express her affection for him. Those two were going on simultaneously. So then when Krishna, he finally began to nurse, she nursed him, he was suckling her, and then finally he wouldn't let go. And he kept holding. And so what happened is that finally he sucked all the life air out of her, and then she fell down dead. So in the past, we know that as a result of Prahlad Maharaj getting the benediction from Lord Nrsingadev, in which he says all of your ancestors will all be, because Prahlad said, would you please protect my father, would you please save my father. So Lord Nrsingadev, he says, I will not only save your father, but I'll save 11 generations in the past, and I'll save 11 generations for the future. So everyone will be liberated from your family. So here we are. Bali Maharaj, he gets liberation as a result. He gives up 3 steps of land, which he gives his, basically his body, his mind, his intelligence, everything he owns. And in return, the Lord, of course, gives him liberation, gives him his own planet, Sutala. Even was nicer than Indraloka. And so, Ratnamali is his daughter. So she's in the same family. So eventually what happens is that Putana does not go to hell. What she gets, because Lord Nrsingadev, he promised, all and his family, they will all go back to Godhead. So what happens is, now in one of the other Puranas, either Garga Samhita or the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, it's mentioned that when Putana was lying there, it's not in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a big chariot descends from the sky. And then in her subtle form, she gets onto the chariot and then she goes straight up to Goloka, where she gets the opportunity to be a nurse to Krishna. So my point is this, is that in all of these stories, there may be a backstory. So we can't sit in judgment on Krishna. How could you do this? He's a demon. He's a bad person, evil, and you're bringing him back to Godhead. We cannot try to understand the Supreme Lord, although sometimes he makes himself understandable. We cannot demand that. He gives what he wants. He does what he wants. Our only business is to lovingly serve him. Now, I kept hearing in one of the classes, and it bothered me very much, one particular speaker kept talking about how we can control Krishna, how we can conquer Krishna. That is not our business. And we should never even be thinking of controlling and conquering Krishna. We should be thinking of being controlled by Krishna, being conquered by Krishna, begging him to take over and conquer our tongue, conquer our eyes, conquer our whole body, so that we become his, not he becomes mine. Him becoming mine is simply a byproduct of my loving sentiments towards him. But the very idea of me thinking of wanting to control Krishna is the last thing I would ever want to do. So I kept hearing that, and I finally had to walk out of the class. Because it went on for 5 minutes. Conquer Krishna, control Krishna, manipulate him, make him... There's no need. Our only business is to give our love to him, to give our surrender to him, to give our all to him, and in so doing, not expect anything, nothing, only the opportunity to go on doing the same thing. And if we get that, that should be more than enough. But generally, Krishna gives us much more than this. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Are there any, I only have time for maybe one question. No questions? No comments? Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.